Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about Plato's Phaedo. Sophie, you read this one too, right?
I did, and honestly, it's one of those dialogues that stays with you. It's Plato's account of Socrates' last day, and it's less about proving the afterlife and more about showing how a wise man faces death. It's a big deal for understanding ancient Greek thought.
Right, and it's framed as a story. Phaedo, one of Socrates' students, tells a friend about the final hours. It's not just a dry argument, it's a scene.
Exactly.
And the scene is powerful. Socrates is in prison, about to drink hemlock, but he's totally calm. He's even rubbing his leg where the chains were, talking about how pleasure and pain are connected. That sets up the whole theme, the soul versus the body.
His friends are freaking out, obviously. They can't believe he's so chill. So Socrates says, "I'm not afraid because I've spent my whole life preparing for this." For him, philosophy is about detaching the soul from the body's distractions.
The body is a distraction, right? He thinks our senses fool us. Real knowledge comes from reasoning, not from seeing or tasting. So the philosopher practices a kind of dying all the time by ignoring bodily pleasures and focusing on the mind.
So if you've been practicing for death your whole life, why fear it? It's like a runner who's trained for a marathon and then panics at the starting line. That would be weird.
Exactly.
But his friends still want proof the soul survives. So Socrates gives a series of arguments, starting with the argument from opposites. Everything comes from its opposite. Something can't become taller unless it was shorter first. So life must come from death, and vice versa. It's a cycle.
That one feels a bit thin, honestly. It's more about nature's cycles than about the soul itself.
It is, but he moves on to the argument from recollection, which is stronger. He says we have ideas of perfect things, like perfect equality or perfect beauty, but we never see them in the real world. We see sticks that are roughly equal, but we know what absolute equality would be.
How?
We must have known it before we were born. Our souls existed before birth and had access to these perfect forms. So when we see imperfect examples here, it reminds us of the perfect version we already knew.
Right.
So that proves the soul existed before birth. Then the argument from affinity tries to show it also survives after. He divides reality into two realms, the visible, changing world of the body, and the invisible, unchanging world of the forms. The soul is more like the invisible realm, so when the body dies, the soul, being similar to the eternal, should persist.
But then his friends push back. Simmias says, maybe the soul is like a harmony of a lyre. It's beautiful and invisible, but when the lyre breaks, the harmony is gone. That's a tough one.
It is, and Sebes adds another problem. He says, even if the soul outlasts the body many times, like a weaver outlasting his cloaks, it could still eventually wear out and die. So Socrates has to go deeper.
And he does. He takes apart the harmony idea by saying that a harmony can't oppose its instrument, but the soul constantly fights the body. It resists, desires, and commands the body. So it's not a passive effect. It's an active ruler.
Then for Sebes, he brings in the forms. He says that a thing is beautiful because it participates in the form of beauty, and the soul is that which makes a body alive. Now, a form can never admit its opposite. The number three will never become even. Snow will never become hot. So the soul, being the bearer of life, can never admit death. It's essentially immortal.
That's a logical necessity. The soul is defined by life, so death can't touch it. It's like saying a triangle can't have four sides. It's not about physical survival. It's about the essence of what the soul is.
And then Socrates caps it off with a myth about the afterlife. He tells a story about the true earth, which is more beautiful than ours, and about how souls are judged. The pure philosophers go to a happy place. The average decent people get purified. And the incurable criminals get thrown into Tartarus, a bottomless pit.
He's not saying this is literal fact, though. He calls it a noble risk. It's a story worth believing because it gives the universe a moral structure. It makes justice cosmic.
And then comes the real ending. The sun sets, the servant brings the hemlock, and Socrates drinks it without a flinch. His friends break down crying, but he stays calm. His last words are to Crito, "We owe a cock to Asclepius. Don't forget it."
Asclepius is the god of healing. So Socrates is saying that death is a cure. It's the final release from the sickness of life. That's such a beautiful way to see it.
It's a powerful image. And the dialogue isn't really about proving the afterlife. It's about showing that a life devoted to wisdom and virtue is worth living, no matter what happens after. Socrates proves that by how he dies.
For me, the takeaway is that how we face death reveals how we've lived. If you've been practicing detachment from bodily fears, then death isn't scary. It's just the next step. That idea makes me want to live more intentionally.
And if you want to explore more of these big ideas, the whole library's on 7minutebooks.com/app. It has over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language, and it starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. In the end, the Phaedo reminds us that death is not something to fear, but a transition we can prepare for by living well. We'll see you in the next one.